Well, we just learned a lot about what makes soil healthy and how important that is for all of us. And of course, for most of us, the soil we think about the most is what's right outside our doorstep, our yard and our garden. A lot of items that end up in the garbage can could go into a compost pile or maybe into a worm bin instead. And as a result, we have a lot of wonderful, rich compost to add to the soil. Joe Van Rossum is a recycling specialist and the director of the UW Extension Solid and Hazardous Waste Education Center with us now to talk about composting and vermiculture. And Joe, thanks a lot for coming by today. Appreciate it very much.
Good morning, Larry. Glad to be here.
I want to really encourage our listeners to join in. Maybe you have a compost pile. Maybe you have one that doesn't work as well as you like. How do you use your compost? Are you intrigued about worm composting? Thinking of starting a bin? I tell you what, Sandy Sawchuk was on the program yesterday, and her daughter, who's going to be working at a children's museum, has started a vermiculture project for them, and is really having a lot of fun with it and learning a lot. And I think it could be something that you might enjoy doing too. Well, we'll talk about that with Joe, and certainly take your questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mehler Show. We'd love to hear from you for certain. And Joe, again, welcome. Thanks a lot for being with us today. Appreciate it. We have a lot of people have compost piles outside that they add food waste to. How does that kind of compost work?
It works very well. Matter of fact, Larry, the important thing you want to do if you're taking your kitchen scraps and putting in a compost pile in your backyard, you want to be sure that you're mixing in some high carbon or brown materials, mm-hmm. Adding in some leaves, adding in some straw, so that you have a balanced diet for those organisms that are doing the composting work for you. If you just add straight food scraps to your compost pile, your neighbors probably are not going to be very happy with you. You're going to have some ammonia smells and some rotten egg smells. So those organisms that are doing that work, they need some brown materials in it. They need some fiber, Larry.
So, okay, so we got brown. What are brown materials, obviously one component, and then the food materials can be another component. What are the successful components?
Well, really, if you want to be successful, you don't need to have a lab report on the materials you're putting in. You don't need scales in your backyard. Mix about two to three volumes of brown materials, leaves or straw, along with one volume of kitchen scraps or grass, the green materials, and you're going to probably have a pretty happy compost bin.
Sounds good to me. And we've got callers already calling in with questions for you. 1-800-642-1234, the number for you to call. Join in. Let's go to Bellevue, Iowa, and talk with Kevin.
Hey, good morning to both of you.
Morning.
Good morning.
I listened to your last show, and I saw a movie called Fresh the Movie, and I recommend that to be seen by others because it talks about, even though our population grows so much and composting and good soil is important, that we can really do this if we educate people maybe to be less dependent on a meat diet. But secondarily, I have a 30 by 70 organic garden that I'm trying to create. It's hard to get enough compost into that. Some farmers have offered some manure in for me to utilize, but they use a fair amount of antibiotics in their animal feed and stuff like that. Wondered if that can be transferred or impregnated in my soil and taken up by my plants. Is that a risk, or should I look for other sources to create this additional compost mixture?
Well, I think it's always a challenge to have a good understanding of what you're adding into your compost pile and what may cause harm to you. The challenge with monitoring where things end up, pharmaceuticals, for example, in the environment, is it can be a difficult question to answer. Some of the pharmaceuticals will break down rather quickly once they get into the environment. Others are more persistent, and they may last 2 weeks. They may last 2 years in the environment. So if you have concerns about where those materials might end up, You know, maybe you try to find a source that has a fewer pharmaceutical concerns with it.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I believe in, too, to find that compost that's the chickens are free-range or in other areas and things like that where there's less dependency on agribusiness farming. I appreciate that, and, yeah, creating enough compost is a tricky part from just food scraps and things around our small acreage here.
Yeah, have you got lots of trees around, Kevin?
I do have a fair number of trees. I just didn't know, you know, leaves don't really create nitrogen, I don't think, and other things. But you're right, I have tons of leaves, and what are you thinking there?
Well, I'm just thinking that they're an important part of, or can be an important part, can't they,
Yeah, certainly the leaves are important, but as Kevin said, the source of nitrogen, the greens, can be a challenge. People have been going to coffee shops. People have been working with grocery stores to take some of their waste food materials to add to their compost pile as a way to bring nitrogen into their composting systems.
Yeah. And I was just concerned about even those sources of food because it's much of that food has also been highly processed, and I was trying to avoid that. But I appreciate it. It's a challenge, but I encourage everyone to get out there and do what's right by the environment. Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. And here's John in Fall Creek. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I've got an area, well, it was a pen, that I overwintered some heifers. And so there's, the usual cow manure constituents, are, you know, and the hay that I fed them, some of it always goes to waste. And so that's, there was brown material. The problem is it was big enough that I really couldn't do anything with it as far as aerating it. So it is 5 years old and composted, but composted anaerobically. So I'm wondering I've been telling people that want some and come and get some to don't put more than an inch on their garden space, or it would, I'm afraid it would be pretty hot in terms of nitrogen and acidity. But, am I right about that? How would you mitigate that, how strong that stuff is?
Well, John, it's... what you have there is well-aged manure, obviously, and the amount of nitrogen or how hot that manure might be is going to depend on how much bedding was mixed with it. If it's mostly bedding, you probably don't have to worry so much about too much nitrogen in it. And what you can probably tell the people who are taking that well-aged manure, that add a little at a time, see how the plants react to it. If they react well to it, maybe add a little bit more. But if you really wanted to know what you had there, a simple soil test or a manure test through your local extension office would be a good way to learn exactly what you have there, how much nitrogen is there, and how much your customers can be applying to their gardens.
Yeah, that'd be a really good opportunity.
I can just take cores and run it through my regular my soil test kit.
Correct. You should, and ask for a manure test.
Well, I've got a kit. I would do it here.
Yeah, I would certainly try it.
Yeah.
Okay. So that way you know what you have, John, and you can provide information to people so that they can best use it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I was correct that it would be better to use it in a sparing fashion.
Yeah, it could well be. I mean, I test it and find out, see what you got. I remember years, and this is years and years ago, renting a house, farmhouse. And the owners said, "We'll put a garden in for you." I wanted a garden, and they said, "Well, here's a spot not far from the house where we had a chicken coop, and the chickens were all in the pen there." And I said, "Oh, okay." And I'm telling you, I had some the amount of nitrogen that must have been in that soil, I didn't test. I got some huge, tall-growing crops that first year.
That's sure. But, sometimes there's such a thing as too much nitrogen for some of your plants. So you get nice, tall, leggy plants, but no fruit on, the tomatoes.
Yeah. I was lucky enough. I think it had been enough time I got good growth, and I got really good tomatoes, too. So
that's good.
Thanks again, John. Dean in McHenry, Illinois. It's your turn. Hi.
Hello, Larry.
Thanks for calling.
Well, I was listening to your program, and I'm a worm farmer in McHenry, Illinois.
Well, good for you.
And basically, I take around 7 tons of coffee grounds from one coffee house every year. I get produce anywhere from 50 to 500 pounds a week from a grocery store.
Wow.
And the vermicompost is just awesome. I get a soil analysis, all my bacteria, fungi, protozoa, the nematodes, everything are great. And it's amazing on how you can see your yields even increase with a healthy soil. You get a healthy plant, which fights off more diseases, and it doesn't really cost you anything except for getting the worm bin started.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to, you don't have to be a worm farmer, Larry, to get started.
Mm-hmm.
I have a worm bin in my office where the vegetable peels and the apple cores from my lunch go into. So even Dean said he's getting, 50 to 500 pounds per week from a grocery store. I probably put a half a pound per week in my worm bin in my office. So it's really easy to do it on any scale. You don't have to go into business for yourself. So,
but that sounds like a fun. Do you sell your product, Dean?
Yes, I do. And I work with nonprofit organizations in the Chicagoland area that are basically supplying the worms to teachers so that they can show the kids a different way of composting. And they're kind of doing the same thing with like an 18-gallon tote, get a pound of worms, and the kids are literally feeding the worms from class. They're taking the apple cores, the banana peels, the napkin, and putting it in there and then watching it all disappear, and they're seeing how this is done. And talking to the teachers, they just love it.
Yeah, there certainly is a lot of teachers who use vermicomposting or worm composting as a way to teach students about responsibility for our waste and to learn about science, math, and other subjects.
Yeah.
There's a great book out there for teachers as a resource called Worms Eat Our Garbage by Mary Appelhoff. It has some great classroom activities that students can look into.
Worms Eat Our Garbage. I'm writing that down. Judith will probably, she'll probably have that up on my Facebook page before the show's over. She's really fast when it comes to that. Worms Eat Our Garbage. So we'll have that up. And Dean, thank you.
Oh, no problem. I love your shows.
So how many pounds do you get? How much do you get per year with all that?
Well, it's a part-time business right now. I'm trying to make it a full-time business by selling more castings.
Yeah.
The worms have been carrying me through. I sell probably 300 to 500 pounds a year in worms, and I can sell a couple of tons of vermicompost a year.
Ah, very, very cool. Well, I thank you very much for calling. Steven Rhinelander has some great questions as well. And Steve, I hope you'll stay with us here. We need to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with Joe Van Rossum, a recycling specialist and the director of the UW Extension Solid and Hazardous Waste Center. If you think about what you throw out in the course of an average day, what's going into your trash? If you're throwing out vegetable peelings or coffee grounds or eggshells or even paper towels and Kleenex, you're missing an opportunity to compost. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We learned a lot about what soil is and what makes it healthy or not in the last segment of our show, but we've turned our attention to easy ways that all of us can use to improve and support soil health, and we can do it by composting. Joe Van Rossum is a recycling specialist and the director of the UW Extension Solid and Hazardous Waste Education Center. And Joe, great to have you with us. Thanks so much for taking the time today.
Well, glad to be here, Larry.
We have lots to talk about as it relates to vermiculture and soil composting. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mehler Show. And Stephen Rhinelander's been waiting a long time, so let's go to Steve. Thank you for waiting, Steve.
Well, thank you for taking the call and having such good guests on today. This is vermiculture is something I've been considering for about a half a year now. I've raised quite a few chickens up here, and I'll get a ton or so of litter mixed with chicken manure. And I have to let it set for quite a few years before I can put it on my small food plot. It's mixed about a 50-50 with wood shavings or sawdust with the manure. And I'm not very good at composting, so I was thinking about worms, and I'm wondering, would that sort of thing be too hot for the worms to thrive in, or is there some other suggestion you might have?
Steve, I think it might be just a little bit too warm for the red wigglers. The one thing about the worms that you want to use for vermicomposting is they don't tolerate freezing conditions very well.
So what kind of conditions?
Freezing conditions.
Oh, mm-hmm. I see.
So they're, as much as I'm unhappy with winters in Wisconsin, the red wigglers are even less happy. If they freeze, they don't survive. The one thing about the type of worms we use for vermicomposting, the Encinia fetida, is it's a surface-feeding worm. It doesn't burrow deep into the ground. And because it doesn't burrow into the ground, it's going to be within the frost zone, and there's a good chance that the worms are not going to survive winters. So unless you have the opportunity to have the chicken manure vermicompost in a warm building during the winter months, vermicomposting may not be the best bet for you.
Mm. Can you use regular worms?
Regular worms don't work so well. The big difference between kind of the worms you dig up in your backyard and the red wigglers is their appetites. The red wigglers will eat about half their body weight in food each day.
Oh.
Whereas the night crawlers and the earthworms that we find typically in Wisconsin, they don't have that sort of an appetite for eating.
So what is there something that he can do to mix?
Probably the best bet would be to do some sort of a static pile composting situation for you, Steve. If you wanted to kind of follow up directly with me,
I would.
My phone number is 608-262-0936. And I'd be happy to work with you to come up with a composting recipe that you can use on your farm.
I have 608-262-0936.
That is correct.
Well, thank you very much for your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Steve. Appreciate it. And good luck with that, because it sounds like he's got the potential there. He's got some really good materials that he could be using and just needs to get that right combination.
Yeah, absolutely. He has some wonderful materials for composting. The wood chips and shavings help create pathways for air to move into the compost pile. There can be plenty of browns or carbon available.
Yeah.
The poultry manure has lots of nitrogen and has the potential to make a really nice compost product.
Absolutely. Cindy in Belleville, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks for the program. My call is similar to a couple other callers. I'm a sheep farmer, and I am putting in a fairly large-scale composting system for my barn bedding, which, of course, will be a combination of straw, waste hay, and manure. And this would be about 20 feet by 30 feet area, concrete-lined, and with a fairly large tank to hold the manure tea runoff. The designer that has put together the plans for this is advising us to put a roof over it. My instinct tells me that I don't want to cover this, so I wanted to get your opinion.
Well, Cindy, a roof would do one of two things. It will probably help retain some of the heat within that system, so the composting process may stay more active through the winter months in Wisconsin. It's also going to keep the rainfall from falling onto your compost. That has the possibility to leach some of the nutrients out and into your compost tea container that you mentioned. On the other hand, the composting process produces a lot of water vapor that's going to be leaving the compost pile and that'll float up into the into your roof and may cause the wood to decay. If you have a metal roof, it may cause the metal roof to rust. So, you know, it's kind of a catch-22. There's some benefits to it, but, you know, maintaining the quality of that roof may become a challenge over time.
Yeah, it's a tricky one.
Yes, yeah. Yes, it is. And some compost benefits from having rainwater falling on it because it's adding liquid and moisture to the composting process.
Yeah.
The one thing that many composters struggle with, especially backyard composters, is having enough moisture. We want about a 50% mix of moisture into the composting process. So that's about as damp as a well-wrung-out sponge.
Right, right.
Okay.
All right, thanks for your help.
Yeah,
sure, thanks, Cindy.
Thanks, Cindy, for calling. Richard in Rhinelander. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah. Excellent program.
Thanks.
I have a rather unique problem. I've had the opportunity to collect coffee grounds from several local coffee gas stations, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I have about a 2-ton pile on my property of nothing but pure coffee grounds and with the filters mostly still in, which are the non-bleach used filters.
Yep.
And I'm kind of curious whether I can vermicompost just pure coffee grounds.
I think theoretically, Richard, you could vermicompost the pure coffee grounds. I think the challenge is that, you know, we need balanced diets. Our red wigglers need a little bit of a balanced diet as well. So mixing in perhaps some other food scraps along with that, mixing in a source of high carbon materials or browns, maybe some leaves mixed in with that would be good, just to kind of formulate a better diet for those organisms.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Good luck. Appreciate it. We have Helen in Menominee Falls next. Hello, Helen.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I have a very lovely garden and an apartment. Okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And cannot have a compost bin. But what I have been doing over the years is collecting my kitchen scraps and then digging a hole between the plants and burying this. And it always seems to disappear within a week. But I'm wondering if that's okay to do or if there's something else I should be adding to that. You know, it's the veggies, fruit, coffee, tea leaves. And the second question I have, it regards the garden worms. And I understand it's not just any old worms we want in the garden. We want the red worms. And where do you get red worms for gardens?
Okay, Helen. Well, let's talk about burying food scraps in our garden. Actually, you are composting. One of the styles of composting is called trench composting. That's where we create a trench in our garden. We put our food scraps into it, and then we cover it with a small layer of soil and kind of fill up a row that way. What's happening there is the soil organisms are doing that composting process. One of the things you want to be hesitant about is try not to get them too close to perhaps the roots of some of the active plants as it's actively composting, because those soil organisms will compete with your plants for the nutrients within those materials you're adding.
So they'll tie up the nitrogen especially.
Yes, that's the number one thing. So if you if those soil organisms are looking for nitrogen, they're going to get to it quicker than your plants typically will. Your other question regarding garden worms. One of the things about the worms that exist in Wisconsin is they're all invasive species.
Yeah.
It's one thing that not everybody is aware of. And even growing up, when I learned about what good garden soil looks like, you know, the teachers always said, if you have worms in your garden, that must mean you have this healthy garden soil. But truth be told, worms are an invader, and they can cause some damages in some sensitive woodland areas in Wisconsin and in the Midwest. You know, if you have worms in your garden, I don't necessarily think that you need to go out and purchase a specific type of worm to make your garden soil healthier. You're adding organic matter to your garden. If you're adding organic matter to it, the organisms that will use that as a food source are going to come to your garden, and they're going to make your soil healthy.
Yeah, there you go.
Interesting. Very good.
Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Facebook question from Elaine, who says, I live in the Central Sands region. We don't have worms in the soil here. Should I buy some and put in my compost pile, or would they just die?
Well, I think I would actually never advocate buying worms for an outdoor compost pile.
No.
The organisms that do the majority of the composting work are the organisms that we can't see without a microscope. It's the bacteria and fungi that are found in soil. They do the majority of that composting work. And if we build our compost piles with the right balanced diet of browns and greens, our compost piles are going to heat up at temperatures that are hotter than worms can tolerate. So, and we want those warm temperatures because it makes the composting process go faster.
Yeah.
It also kills weed seeds. I'm a gardener as well, and I do not like pulling weeds. And if I can kill weed seeds in a hot compost pile,
all the better.
All the better, yes.
We have Jeff in Marshfield next with a question. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, guys. I've been keeping a little organic waste compost pile at our house for years now, and just in reading and other people, I've always heard you should keep oils and fats out of your compost bin, and I'm wondering if there's any truth or validity to that. It seems to me there's plenty of bacterial organisms that would love to feast on fats and oils as well. Is there a problem that arises if you put, some little bit of food scraps or oil scraps in your bin?
Jeff, I think if you're just getting kind of minimal amounts on it, say you've had some vegetables that had a little bit of olive oil or a little bit of butter on them, it's okay to have little bits of amount.
Mm.
The challenge comes with
raccoons.
Well, they can show up, and if you're burying your food scraps in your compost pile, covering them with a layer of leaves or straw, that should dissuade any critters from looking for a meal. The challenge is if you do add those sorts of materials, you have to be a good composter and pay attention to your compost pile to make sure that you're not getting any rotten egg smells or ammonia smells coming out of it. The challenge with a home composter is sometimes life gets in the way of doing things in our backyard. So as with all things, moderation is important.
Okay. Well, thanks for your advice.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. What do we have here from Sarah in Zion, Illinois? You are next. Hi, Sarah. Thank you for calling.
Well, hi. Thank you for taking it. I wanted to talk a little bit about the trench composting, and I just wanted to mention that in my life I've knew two people who were just fanatics about doing that, and they were both from Germany. One was an exchange student. The other one, she's 80, and she grew up in Germany, and now she lives here. So I thought it was just this weird German thing that people did. But anyway, I'm really glad that you mentioned it because I live in an apartment too, and I have the same like compost dilemma. So I'm going to start doing that, but how deep should I do it?
Usually if you dig a trench maybe 10 to 12 inches deep, and as you place the food scraps into that trench, you'll cover it with an inch or two of soil. If you see some animals digging into where you've buried the materials, cover it with a little bit extra soil to dissuade them from doing any digging. The other alternative certainly is vermicomposting. If you are in, a condominium or an apartment, it's a great way to take care of and manage your food scraps rather than dumping them in the trash.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, worth a try anyway. And for more information, by the way, just for more information on getting all this going and started, Worms Eat Our Garbage, is that the best? Is that a good one?
That's absolutely the definitive guide to vermicomposting.
Okay.
It's a quick read, and Mary Appelhoff, the author, did a great job in putting that that manual on vermicomposting together.
And we've posted it up on my Facebook page, so you can just link and go right to it. And your department, you've got some great information too.
Yeah, if you go to our website, we have a publication section. If you search compost, you'll have up to 40 different resources related to composting, how to start vermicomposting, how to build your own backyard compost bin, and kind of how to get started on doing some of these things.
Yeah, and you're doing it, you say you're doing it every week and you got it right in your office.
I have a worm bin in my office. I have three compost bins in my backyard. So it's part of what I do, not just what I talk about.
Well, I like that. And then the materials, so you put those into your garden, or what do you do with them?
Yeah, I can't make enough compost. So sometimes I'll buy some compost to add to my garden. You know, I'm feeling a little bit behind this year with my garden with the strange weather we've had this spring. So we'll be sifting my compost hopefully this weekend, adding some into the garden before we plant so that we can have healthier soil and healthier plants.
What about are there any products or food products that maybe you shouldn't throw into a pile? Are there things that don't work well?
Really, we want to, if you're just starting out composting, meat, fats, and oils are things that we want to keep out. They can be a challenge because they decompose so quickly and can cause some bad odors, which we really want to avoid with composting. But, you know, vegetable peels are fine. If you eat, you know, a dozen oranges every day, you'll probably notice that the orange peels don't break down very quickly. But, you know, anything that you can add to your compost pile, vegetable-based, fruit-based sort of thing, it's usually going to be okay and good food for your composters.
And the worms, again, that we use are the red worms.
The red wigglers, sometimes they're called tiger worms or manure worms. The Latin name is Encinia foetida. There's plenty of places that you can purchase them. Usually online is the best way. Our website has a listing of some retailers that we found, many of them in Wisconsin.
And then when the worms are working, well, of course, what they produce is worm poop, I guess you could say. They call it castings.
Yeah, they call it castings. And especially when you're working with kids groups, I try to stick with worm castings instead of worm poop. You tend to lose the crowd if it, with the giggles that ensue after talking about worm poop.
And do you get out and speak a lot to groups?
I don't get to out and speak a lot directly with public groups. We just finished up some training programs with about 50 people around the state to become master composters, where they learn more about the composting process and, just as importantly, how to teach others in their communities how to start composting in their backyards. So those are the sorts of trainings that I work with. I also work with a number of large-scale composting operators to help improve the quality of the products that they're producing.
Well, this is very cool. So Master Compost, sort of like the Master Gardener program then. It's a Master Composter program.
It is a little bit. Our focus is, again, on providing volunteers with some of the skills to teach others how to start composting in their backyards. Very focused. Whereas Master Gardener, there's a lot of topics that people can talk about.
Yeah, you get through a whole variety. So now, when do you have these training sessions?
As I said, Larry, we just wrapped up.
Our
trainings for the spring. Each year, I'm able to work with about four county extension offices to host the trainings. And later this year, I'll send out a solicitation to see who's interested in hosting a group. And then we go ahead and promote it locally. But inevitably, we're not able to get to every part of the state. We have just so many resources.
And what's the, sort of a typical box? Like, what do you have in your office, for example? Just a wooden box? Or
You can make your own bin using wood or plywood. Other people will use just a plastic storage tub. You know, an 8 or a 10-gallon tub works well. There's a fact sheet on our website that shows you how to build your own worm bin using a plastic tub. You can also purchase manufactured bins that look a little bit nicer maybe than the plastic tub. But, you know, it doesn't cost a whole lot to get started. But, you know, I encourage people who are just even slightly interested, give it a try.
And how many worms do you need to buy? I assume whatever your order, when you're putting an order in, these folks know how much they're going to, many worms and so forth.
Usually people will start out with either a half a pound or 1 pound of worms.
Oh, so, by the pound.
By the pound. Not. We don't want to, I don't suggest people going to the bait shop to buy their red wigglers. Number one, you may not actually be getting the right worm. And number two, you're paying a lot for, you know, usually 3 dozen red wigglers is going to cost you $3 or $4.
Yeah.
Whereas a pound of red wigglers has 1,000 worms in it. So it may seem a lot to spend maybe $25 or $30 for a pound of red wigglers, but buying in bulk, you save.
So actually, you could combine, if you're a fisherman, you could these red wigglers would certainly work for fishing, too.
Yeah, certainly. It's the bait box as well. So not only do you get vermicompost for your plants, you keep the fishermen and your family happy, too.
Oh, man, that's great. Joe, thank you so much. I hope we can do this again. It was a lot of fun.
It was. Thank you for having me, Larry.
Joe Van Rossum is a recycling specialist and directs the UW Extension Solid and Hazardous Waste Education Center. Wasn't that fun? I learned a lot. I hope you did, too. And hopefully we'll have some more vermiculturists out there. Did I invent a new word? Maybe not. Vermiculturist. I could call myself a professional vermiculturist, maybe, if I took that program from Joe, that class from Joe. Oh, man, it was lots of fun. And tomorrow we'll take a look at the author of 25 Ways to Cure the Hiccups, among other things, uncovering the truth behind 101 Common Myths. And then Rick Seeney joins us from FairCompare.com. Stay with us.